Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. And we're going to have Vince Welsh on from ESPN to talk about the Indianapolis 500. And should be a fun show. I know it's a show Kevin's been waiting for a long time. And I know that in his excitement, he's been thrilled about this possibility of getting us to talk about more open wheel racing on the show. So we're setting it up in this process right now. And to talk about the Indianapolis 500, which will be run this weekend. And we are looking forward to, as we do every year, the Indy 500. And as soon as Kevin has it set up, we will be set to go. This is, you know, you're talking about a race that that is special. I mean, there are just certain moments, there are certain signature moments in the course of a year. A Daytona 500, a Super Bowl, a World Series, a Kentucky Derby, an Indianapolis 500. And let's bring in Vince Welsh now. Vince joining us, I would assume, from Indianapolis. Vince, how are you? Great to have you with us.
Thanks. I appreciate being on. And I am in Indy and looking forward to Sunday for sure.
Oh, I'm sure you are. The fact that it's a story that the field is full at 33, you know the history of this. Is that a significant story that the field is full with 33?
It is. You know, the field has been fewer than 33. It's been larger than 33. But the Indianapolis 500, I think, for those that follow it, know that the field, quote unquote, is 33. And I think it means something to have 33 cars in it. And, you know, there's always some that are more competitive than others, regardless if you have one engine manufacturer, two engine manufacturer, three engine manufacturer, it doesn't matter. I mean, for years and years and years, you always have the comers and goers, as they say. But having 33 in the field, I think, is important.
Ryan Briscoe, closest pole race in Indianapolis 500 history. What did you like about his run? And when you talk to his people, what did they like about the setup of his car?
Well, what I liked about it, first of all, it's amazing that, 9 inches over the course of 10 miles, you know, the 23/10,000ths of a second, I think, has separated the two fastest qualifiers. And over the course of a 10-mile run, that's 9 inches, which gives you an indication of just how close it really was. And I'm happy for Ryan. You know, he's had some opportunities in the past to capitalize on some big races. It hasn't worked out his way. You know, he's kind of the third guy at Penske, at least in the minds of some, behind Will Power, who's having such a great season this year, and Elio Castroneves, who's won the 500 three times, and then there's Ryan Briscoe. And while those who follow the sport closely, I think, believe that Briscoe can win at any time, you know, there are those that have begun to wonder, I think, to be quite honest, and for him to have won the pole for the Indianapolis 500 is a huge shot in the arm for him, I think, professionally. And it's also a big boost for him from a confidence standpoint. You know, anytime you drive for Roger Penske, you know that the bar is raised for Indianapolis. I mean, that's the one they want more than any. And I joked with Tim Cindric, who's the president of Penske Racing, earlier in the month, and I said, you know, are you guys going to just win them all because they're off to such a great start this season? And he said, no, we're going to start sharing after Indianapolis. And there's no doubt about it that that's the one that has the big star by it, and it's always been the case for Penske, and that Roger handles the strategy for Ryan Briscoe. I know it's special for him that that Ryan will start the race from the pole on Sunday.
He had a horrific accident at the Texas Motor Speedway years ago, and at one point he drove for Chip Ganassi. Just the mere comeback part of this for him, when you've talked to him, what's the sense that you've received from him? Is there a sense of redemption, or because he hasn't won Indy yet, that, that redemption is still to come?
Well, there are a lot of drivers who haven't won Indy, so I think that he desires that just as they do. And I think the one thing about Indianapolis is that as many of the drivers who have told me who have won it once says it just makes you hungrier to win it again. You know, you think that if I could just win Indy, but then once you win it, it's such a great accomplishment that you have an incredible desire to win it again and again. And then there are those that, you know, that have yet to win it. Some are in a better position than others. And I think Ryan looks at that situation as knowing he drives for Roger Penske. He knows he would, in all likelihood, never have a better opportunity with any other team to ever win the biggest race. And he's in great equipment, powered by Chevrolet, which at least through qualifying has been the, you know, the power plant to have. And I got to believe that he feels like, of all times to win the Indianapolis 500, this is his best chance to do it. I don't think he's desperate by any stretch. All race car drivers know that it doesn't last forever, but I think he's in a really good place from a mental perspective. He seems confident yet relaxed, and I think that's a great demeanor to have when you're going into a big pressure-packed race.
What about Will Power? Give us a read on him and what he brings to the table that could allow him to go 500 miles faster than anybody.
Well, I think with Will Power, again, as a Penske driver who's, you know, gotten off to a great start this season where, you know, he's been the guy to beat, but he's been the guy to beat on the road and the street courses. And that's where Will Power's strength is. And Will is getting better on the ovals, and, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he won the Indianapolis 500, but still, that's not exactly his wheelhouse, if you will, the oval racing. And I've seen him become more confident and more comfortable on the ovals, and you used to look at him and you could see the doubt in his eyes when he was at the big, fast ovals. You don't see that so much anymore. And I think that, obviously, any of the Penske drivers, I think, are three of the top four or five favorites in the race. And Power, boy, he's had such a great start to the season. I don't know that I would pick him as my favorite, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's right there at the end, battling the top five for sure. But I still don't know that the oval is where he's, you know, the big oval is where he's going to show his great talent.
Marco Andretti had some great practice runs. He ended up having a very good qualifying run. What are your thoughts on him?
You know, I talked to Marco a little bit earlier in the month. He was very confident earlier in the week, last week. He was very confident, liked the setup of his race car, felt like it was comfortable and very racy in a race setup. And you know, there's only in qualifying, typically, there's only one guy that's really happy with the way it ends up, and that's the guy that's on the pole. You know, and then there's some others that say, you know what, we're happy to be in the second row, or we're happy to be in the third. You know, Marco's on the inside of the second. And I think in the big picture, he's happy with that. You know, the big check comes on Sunday. Yeah, everybody likes to be on pole, and there's $100,000 that comes with that, and they talk about you all week as the pole sitter. But the one you really want is the big one on Sunday. You want your face on the BorgWarner Trophy, and you want to drink the milk at Indianapolis. And certainly Marco feels, in my opinion, that this is the best chance that he has out of all the races previously to do it. He's matured. His car is good. His team is good. His team is cohesive. And I think he's very comfortable with this setup. And even though he almost won it the year Sam Hornish won the Indianapolis 500, I think this is the best opportunity of all the 500s he's currently run that Marco Andretti would finally get to victory lane.
We saw what happened with J.R. Hill LeBrand on the final lap a year ago. Again, another one of those Indianapolis 500s with an exciting finish. It seems like every time we've turned around, there's been an exciting finish to the Indianapolis 500. Give us an idea, as someone who has been around the Brickyard as long as you have, the what experience means on that track.
You know, I don't think that, you know, I had this question, or I had this conversation actually with James Jakes, who is a rookie at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this year. He was here last year, didn't make the field. And I asked him, what is it, you know, what was different this year when you came back? Even though you didn't make the field last year and you were here trying to do so, how was it different this year when you came back? And he made the comment that, you know, he used the word experience and having been through it before. And I just, you know, that's why it's such a difficult race to win for the rookies. It's 500 miles, so it's a long race. You're more pit stops than you ever, you know, than you do in the other races. More opportunity for error. You know, more opportunity for something to go wrong mechanically, or you to get caught up in somebody's accident, or the pit crew to make a mistake. And the pressure that comes with the quote-unquote month of May, even though it's down to a couple of weeks, there's still more pressure attached to this race than any other. And even though they've only been, you know, it's a two-week process now, I guarantee you there are drivers that feel like it's been a four-week process. And the pressure that comes with that and knowing everything that's on the line and at stake to win this race, I just think you're better suited to have been through it before, to understand that it is 500 miles. You have to be patient. You've got to take your, you know, take your time, even though you want, it's a race. You got to understand that you can't make silly, dangerous moves in the early stages of the race because you've got to be there at the end. I think sometimes it just takes you to go through that a couple of times before you really get a true understanding of it. Not just as a driver, but also as a team, those that are calling strategy, the pit guys who are going over the wall to be relaxed enough that they don't make a mistake, you know, to perform at their optimum level, just as the driver is performing at his optimum level. And with J.R. Hildebrand, who, you know, crashed in the last turn while leading last year, he's a different man this year. He's a different driver. You know, you see the confidence. He's put that incident behind him as much as you can. He's not harboring on it. And you just get a sense and a feel that he's more prepared to win now than he was a year ago, even though he was half a straightaway away from winning it a year ago.
In fact, within that answer, that was my next question. It dealt with patience. Al Unser Sr., Rick Mears, even the late Dan Weldon seemed to have made a nice living in Indianapolis because they understood the value of patience.
You know, you've got to be there at the end. You know, the old saying, you know, before you finish first, you know, you first must finish. And, you know, it sounds so cliche, but you look at the drivers that, you know, they'll use those long races, they'll use two-thirds of the race to just get themselves in position, to make sure that, you know, they're not going to take any chances that's going to cost them. You know, if I give up a spot now, if somebody's being a little too aggressive, I can give up the spot now because I've got 100 laps to go, or, you know, I've got 60 laps, or whatever the case may be. They know that you've got to be in position to win at the end. So you don't take your chances early in the race. And as the race progresses and you start getting closer to the finish, now you got to start ramping up your chance taking a little bit. But if you're not in position to win, you're not going to win. You know, and it's not very often that, you know, last year, fuel mileage played such a huge role in this race, and you saw guys running out of fuel or having to pit late in the race, or, you know, even Frank Keady had to back his speed off so far that, you know, he wasn't able to contend for the win. And you just don't know how those yellows are going to fall, but you got to be in position to strike. And, you know, and I think that's what the veterans understand, the patience of it. Danica Patrick used to talk about that. You know, she said, the thing I learned most that I had no clue when I first got here was the patience it takes to win a 500-mile race. And I think the longer you run it, and then having a little success at it doesn't hurt, but the longer you do it, the more you really get a true understanding of that.
Within that answer, you mentioned Dario. I mean, does that describe Dario, especially the way Frank Keady qualified this time?
you know, Dario Franchitti and Scott Dixon, you know what, Dixon's on the outside of the fifth row, Franchitti's on the inside of the sixth, they're 15th and 16th in qualifying. And, yeah, they're 15th and 16th, and there's no doubt about it that they're disappointed with that. The Hondas have not performed with the power that the Chevrolets have. But if you count out Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti on race day, you're making a big mistake. I mean, those guys will find a way. The Hondas will find a way, I think, to be in the mix at the end. Dixon and Franchitti are not only two of the most talented drivers, but they're two of the smartest. Their team is extremely smart and strategic, with Mike Hull and Barry Wanzer and the engineers on those cars, and of course Chip Ganassi's team. It's just a very smart group, and I know that a lot of people that, you know, fans of theirs are thinking, this isn't our year. But don't count them out. I would not be surprised at all to see one or both of those target cars right there in the mix at the end of the race. And, you know, they don't put your starting position on the Borg Warner. They just put your face. And, there are guys that have won it from back there, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the mix on race day. Dario and Dixon, I think, are just two of the great drivers in this field.
Couple more, Vince, and then we'll let you go. What about the Lotus engines in this, the qualifying horsepower? I mean, to keep them up, to keep the pace, what do you see in the Lotus?
They're not going to keep the pace. It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. You know, it's very unfortunate. I think that it would have just been another level and layer of excitement if you'd have had a third competitive engine in this field. You have a third engine, but it's not competitive. And as much as everyone would like the Lotuses to be competitive, they're just not. The Chevys and the Hondas are light years ahead of them. And, you know, it's not fair to the Hondas and the Chevys. You know, I've heard some people suggest, well, you know, give the Lotuses a bunch of extra boosts so they're competitive on race day. Well, that's not fair to the Hondas and the Chevys that have done their work and done their research and development and their due diligence to be where they are. So the Lotus engines are not going to be competitive on race day. There's two drivers in those cars, and that's unfortunate. With Simona Di Silvestro, who's an outstanding racer, I think is extremely talented, and Jean Alesi, the Formula One star, you know, over 200 Formula One stars. I mean, these are two good race car drivers, but they do not have a chance on Sunday. And I think that a race car driver will just tell you that every time they start a race, all they want is a chance. And it's unfortunate that those two don't have a chance on Sunday.
Finally, ABC is going to have 80 cameras at this. You'll be working in the pits. Give us an idea what the race is for you in the pits. How do you gather the stories, use your contacts, and then how much time does ABC give you as this race continues, and how concise do you have to be in your report?
Well, that's a great question. And the way we do it, Steve, is that we break up pit lane into four areas. You know, there are four pit reporters, and the four of us will have a group of drivers, usually about, 33 drivers in the field to try to break it up pretty evenly. For instance, on race day, I'll be covering Tony Kanaan and Alex Tagliani, Graham Rahal, Anna Beatrice, Charlie Kimball, Scott Dixon, Sebastian Bourdais. Those are the drivers in my area. Now, I have a person with me, which we call a pit assistant, and between the two of us, we're listening to the radios of all of those teams that we're covering. We're listening to the radio or the television broadcast, obviously, what's going on our air. We're hearing our producer and our pit producer also communicating with us. We're listening to on our radio as well as the team channels. We're also listening to the official race channel, so we're hearing the officials communicate as well. So if there's some communication that might affect drivers who are in our particular area. And, you know, you use not just these 2 weeks of the season, but really all season long to do your homework for the Indianapolis 500. Now that we know exactly which drivers we're going to be covering this week, we really zero in on those particular teams and those drivers, talking to the people that handle the strategy for those drivers. And then on race day, you want to let the stories unfold. Yeah, you go there with some things in your saddlebag and some particular notes or nuggets that you'd like to get in if the opportunity presents itself. But the one thing you want to do at the Indianapolis 500, it's such a great event, it's going to provide its own drama, and it's going to provide its own storylines over the course of the 500 miles. You don't want to be trying to stuff things in where they don't work. So you just go in and try to be as prepared as you can possibly be, and when those opportunities present themselves to, make a contribution to the broadcast, you try to do it as efficiently as possible and not get in the way of such a great event and try to enhance it in some way. I got to tell you, it's one of the great thrills. I've covered a lot of events in my life, and I particularly enjoy live event coverage. And to have an opportunity to be a part of the broadcast team for the Indianapolis 500 is sincerely one of the great thrills of my life, not just because I'm an Indianapolis native. I know what this event means, not just as a sporting event worldwide, but also to our community here in Indianapolis. But from a sporting event perspective, and to be a broadcaster and to be a part of a telecast of this magnitude is a great thrill.
And it's exactly what I tell everybody all the time when I broadcast Penn State football, Penn State basketball, or something for the Big Ten Network. I always tell them every event takes on its own personality, but you prepare for every eventuality, but the personality of the event takes on its own as the day goes along.
Yeah, that's what I love about live events. It's not unlike a race team, per se. I mean, you can be prepared, and you can have every scenario in your mind worked out, and you can be 100% convinced that you are prepared to go out there and do the job and win the race, but there's still the human element of it. There's still the pit crew that's got to, get that fuel hose plugged into the car appropriately, and the proper amount of fuel flows through there. The guys going over the wall that are changing the tires to not drop the lug nut to get, that delays the pit stop, or to not get the wheel on tight and the wheel comes off. There's so many things that happen during the course of a race that are human, and you can't control human nature. And so that's why the race unfolds in a mysterious way every single time. No two races are ever the same. And to me, that's what creates the excitement and the drama. I mean, then just look at last year, with J.R. Hildebrand, looking like for sure he was going to be the man to win the Indy 500. And in turn four, it all changed. And Dan Weldon became the winner. And it's just, you never know. And that's what I enjoy about being a part of a live broadcast, especially one of this magnitude.
Well, the broadcast is outstanding, from the tower to the pits to the camera work, and you are a big part of it. You do an outstanding job, and I have great respect for the work that you do, especially in the time frame you have to do it. And I want to thank you for the time you gave us today. I think you gave everyone out there a great education on what's happening on Sunday.
Well, I appreciate it. It's humbling to be a part of the team. We have close to 250 personnel that will be on the grounds at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to pull off that broadcast on Sunday, and just to just to be a part of the team, because I'm on the air, makes me no more significant or no more important than any of the people that work behind the scenes. And it's just great to be a part of the team effort. Not everybody can be the quarterback or the running back that scores the winning touchdown, but every single person on that team is important to getting the job done. And I think we've got the best team in the business, and it's an honor to be a part of it.
You do. And Vince, thank you so much for the time you gave us today.
My pleasure. Enjoy it.
All right. Vince Welsh with us from Indianapolis, and the great broadcast. And it is legitimately a great broadcast on race day from Indianapolis. And Vince is a critical part of that. What he gives you, the knowledge, is just amazing. Hope you learned a lot from it. Sarah Bartlett, our best, is next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
The beautiful Sunbury Motor Studio, as close to radio perfection as you can ask for, courtesy of our great friends at Sunbury Motors, located on 4th Street in Sunbury, and also Sunbury Motors Kia. Went by that outstanding dealership just a couple of weeks ago, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We now bring in the prince of open wheel racing, who unfortunately takes it to the streets literally, Kevin Herb.
That was a great interview. I'm going to listen back to it again so I can actually focus on some of the things that Vince had to say, because I thought there were a lot of little tidbits in there that are going to be very important come race day.
Well, you know, you're not going to bet on this thing, are you?
No. We've proven over the last two.
You sound like you're going to the window.
We've proven over the last two horse races that was not a good idea. So,
well, excuse me, but Girardi had the Preakness right.
I know Girardi
in a box. If you're boxing what he said,
that's true.
He had the finish right.
That's true.
Okay.
Yes.
If you're doing a box,
that's right.
Now with Indianapolis, 500 miles. It goes back to one of the questions I asked. Over the years, Al Unser Sr. was not the fastest guy out there, but he was the survivor. Rick Mears had some survival wins. Dan Weldon, the late Dan Weldon, had some wins where, because he was more patient than everybody else, he won it.
That's a perfect example.
All right. And over 500 miles, you are not going to lead all 200 laps. It's just a fact. I mean, there are going to be moments where you have to have the pit stop time well. You have to have a quick pit in and out. You have to avoid trouble along the way. And 30 laps to go, if you're not winning, you still have to say to yourself, I can win. Because the leader with 10 laps to go traditionally has not won. The leader at lap 190 traditionally has not been the winner of the race.
And I think that will continue again on Sunday, and part of that is because of the new design in the chassis of the vehicles. I don't think you have as much turbulence as you've had in the past year, several years. Watching a lot of the practices this weekend and the past week, the cars have been running much, much closer together than I've seen them run in the last several years. And I think that's really going to make it, if you have four or five cars in that lead pack near each other, anybody could win that race with one lap to go, let alone 10.
It was an interview in which we were provided tremendous insight from Vince Welsh. And he went in depth. This was not one of those deals where you have a guest on and they just skim through, they fill in the time and they go on. He was anxious to talk about racing.
It's funny you mentioned that, because as we were setting up the call, he goes, do you need just a couple of minutes? And I said, actually, if you want to go 15 or 20, that'd be fine. Oh, that'd be great. Right. So, yeah, he enjoyed that.
No, very much so, and you could tell. I mean, we took it right to the bottom of the hour before we got to Sarah and Allie with the news. And this is, there are signature moments in sports. And some of them, the star may have dimmed over time, but it's still significant and important. As much as you try to make the Players' Championship in golf a major, it is not. It is still the Masters and Augusta National. It is still the U.S. Open. It is still the British Open, with the possibility of every 5 years playing at St. Andrews. And it's the PGA. It is Daytona with the 500, Brickyard 400, even though it's more recent, but it's still, because it's at Indianapolis, it's significant. And then the race coming up in Charlotte this weekend, the 600. Right. It's still the Kentucky Derby, and you have to go to Churchill Downs in your lifetime. And I've been to Churchill Downs. I mean, you see the Twin Spires in front of you, you go home. Wow. It's still the Preakness. It's still the Belmont. It's still the World Series. Right. It's still, you know, it'll forever be the Super Bowl. They don't have a problem. It's still the Stanley Cup. It's still the NBA Final. Like, there are certain events. And the Indianapolis 500, yes, the star may have dimmed a bit. And they have not recovered from the split.
Not yet, no.
They haven't.
No.
And it may be a long, long time.
No, I agree with that.
Before they completely recover from the split. And they may never completely recover from it. This is not like the 70s and 80s and into the, you know, in that point when Mario Andretti, Johnny Rutherford, Al Sr. and Al Jr., you know, A.J. Foyt. I mean, when you still had that, and then the emergence at that point of a Rick Mears. I mean, you don't, you know, where they were the star of racing stars. I mean, right now NASCAR has the star power. Even though a Dario Franchitti is a star, even though an Elio Castroneves is a star, Scott Dixon somewhat, Will Power is recognizable, right? Ryan Briscoe's recognizable. But losing Danica going to NASCAR, losing Tony Stewart going to NASCAR, has not helped the image of the Indianapolis 500.
You know, I talked with Michael Andretti in an interview right around the time the split happened between IndyCar and at that time, I believe it was CART at that point. They changed names many times over the years in that division. And he said one of the hardest things was having to make the decision, do I want to stay with where the majority of the names are, or do I want to stay where I have a chance to win the Indianapolis 500? And he said that was one of the toughest decisions to make, was make that swap and leave the Indianapolis 500 for a time.
Sure. I mean, and ultimately, it is, it's hurt the star of the race, especially when they finally made the decision to go live and not taped. But it's still special. There's still going to be between 300,000 and 400,000 at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I will point out that every time we fly into Indianapolis on a team charter, every time we fly in, everybody looks outside the plane to see the speedway. Everybody. It still has that awesome lure to it.
And you know, when Michael talks about the 500, you get that same feeling as well, because you see it in his eyes, you hear it in his voice. And one of the other things he told me that stuck with me over the years, this is a guy that's led more laps at the Indianapolis 500 and hasn't won than anybody, but what I thought was the most interesting is, you know what happens? He said that first lap, when all 33 cars are in rows of three and you come off of turn four and you look at wall-to-wall people on both sides, he said that's the only place you'll ever see that. He said there's this little path of asphalt and people on both sides. He said, I get goosebumps. And he said, it's the only race I get goosebumps for anymore.
Sure. And you can completely understand that. Look, it's, as I said, there are certain signature events that set themselves apart from everything else. Now, look, if you're in horse racing, the Breeders' Cup is really significant. But to the casual fan, the Breeders' Cup is something that happens in the fall. It's got a little more juice than other things, but that's fine. But you say the Kentucky Derby, and everybody goes, oh, yeah, the Kentucky Derby. Right? In racing, you say the Daytona 500, like, hey. You say Indianapolis 500, yeah. Casual fans know that. They know that. Now, you have to be really into racing to understand Darlington, to understand Talladega, Texas World Speedway, Bristol, you know, things like that. I mean, you have to really be into it to know about that. But you mentioned Daytona. Casual fan knows Daytona. You mentioned Indy. Casual fan knows Indy. Casual fan knows Churchill Downs. Okay. And when it, you know, then we can get into team sports and so forth at a later date. You know, they in golf, you mentioned St. Andrews or Augusta National. They know. They know what Wimbledon is. Okay. They know what Wimbledon is. They may not, they have may, the same fans that know Wimbledon may not know that the French Open's at Roland Garros. They may not know that the Australian Open's in Melbourne. But they know the U.S. Open's in New York, and they know that Wimbledon is in England. And that's what makes these events different, special. Because the casual fan knows right away, oh, yeah, they know Wimbledon. They know Indy. You know, they know it. And that's what makes a big difference, huge difference. All right, now our number is 1-800-795-9565, and there are several Kevin Hur topics on the table today. Phillies lost last night 2-1.
I didn't put that on the list.
I know, but found that interesting that no matter what happens with Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Freddie Galvis probably is not going anywhere. His versatility in the infield, where he's taking balls at second, short, and third. And the bottom line is, I believe he leads all rookies in the National League and runs knocked in right now, if I recall correctly.
I'll tell you what, I'm very impressed with his swing. I mean, his swing at the plate, I mean, I was not expecting a guy that, you know, was going to hit the ball very well, but he has a very, very solid swing at the plate.
He's not the issue. He's helped them. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. And they say he's going to be a keeper for them. And I completely understand that.
Now, they need somebody in that aging infield right now.
They do. And down the road, I mean, he could be the Jimmy Rollins, the guy that assumes that spot once Jay rolls out. Also, March 3rd, 1947 is the last time that Penn State played a varsity hockey game, and it was against Georgetown. Well, they released the hockey schedule today. The hockey schedule contains 23 Division I games on it. Penn State will open the season in hockey for the first time since 1947 on a varsity level against American International, AIC, out of Springfield. It'll be Friday, October 12th. It happens to be the bye weekend for Penn State football. Then they will play a second game with AIC on Saturday the 13th of October. But that will be up at the Mohegan Sun Arena at Casey Plaza in Wilkes-Barre. Then they're at Buffalo State on Friday the 19th. Then they'll take on RIT. That will be in Rochester at the arena where the Rochester Americans play, the Blue Cross Arena. And Terry Pegula is also the owner of the Rochester Americans. Then they're at Army on February 26th, at Sacred Heart. So they'll take that West Point to Bridgeport swing at Sacred Heart. Then they are at Fredonia State, their Division III team. Then they're home with Buffalo State, another Division III team, on Saturday, November 3rd. Then they have Air Force on a Friday, Saturday, the 9th and 10th of October, each at 7:30. They're at Union after a two-week break on Saturday the 24th and 25th, and then they go back to the ACHA and bring in Arizona State on Friday, November 30th, and Saturday, December 1st. Then they go to Worcester to play at the old Centrum. I think it's called the DCI Center now, to play Holy Cross on Friday, December 7th, and Saturday, December 8th. Then they're home with Robert Morris on Saturday the 15th. They're going to face Bobby Moe. And then after Bobby Moe, they'll go to Pittsburgh to the Consol Energy Center for a tournament with Miami of Ohio, Ohio State, and Bobby Moe. They make the turn into January, and Penn State will play hockey at UConn in stores on January 4th and 5th. That's a Friday, Saturday. Then they'll have the U.S. National Under-18 team for an exhibition on the 11th and 12th of January at home, and then Newman, a Division III team, on Tuesday, January 15th. They'll take on Vermont at Wells Fargo in Philadelphia on Saturday the 19th. Then they're at Michigan State to play at Biggie Munn Arena on Friday the 25th and Saturday the 26th of January. Then they have six straight home games. Ohio University from the old ACHA, traditional. It's always been Penn State's biggest rival in the ACHA anyway. That'll be Friday, February 1st, and then Groundhog Day on February 2nd. Then Alabama Huntsville, which is Division I, Friday the 8th and Saturday the 9th of February. Then they go back to the ACHA for Oklahoma, Friday the 15th, Saturday the 16th. And then they close out the season at Wisconsin on Sunday the 24th and Monday the 25th at the Kohl Center. So that is the Penn State hockey schedule for the upcoming season. Kevin got to talk to Vince Welsh. He's on cloud nine.
Yeah, my day is complete now.
Our number, and my day would be complete with calls. 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. We'll come back with more from the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio on WKOK after this.
Sunbury Motor Company, a tradition of trust since 1915. We have the largest selection of new and used Fords, Lincolns, Hyundais, and Kias anywhere. You want a new Ford? You got it. A 2012 Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, just $232 per month. And it gets 38 miles per gallon. And if you really want to save mileage money, come get a new 2012 Hyundai Veloster, three-door coupe with 40 miles per gallon on the highway for just $292 a month. Swing on over to Sunbury Motors Kia and try on a new 2012 Kia Forte four-door sedan for just $18,230. And when it comes to used cars, well, just head over to sunburymotors.com and search our huge selection of pre-owned vehicles where you can use our black book and take the guesswork out of trading in your old car. We give you easy access to the most up-to-date internet car buying tools. There's a reason we're number one. So come check us out today at Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, located at 943 North 4th Street in the Auto Plaza, or Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, or go to sunburymotors.com.
And for those of you who have been wondering, no, Curtis Drake is not around here right now. But Rob Bolden is. So
are you saying are you saying that the rumors are rumors
floating around about what, but Rob's still here. And I know his high school coach is saying, no, I don't think he's transferring. I know a lot of people have thought and assumed it, the whole thing, but Curtis is not here. Drake is not here. All right. So, people may be wondering, and I figured I'd at least provide an answer.
And there you have it.
It's quite a show so far. Kevin got to talk to Vince Welsh and volunteer to work on Sunday.
Oh, I definitely. That, I know you tell me all the time, don't do that, but I would definitely do that. I would definitely volunteer to work on that race.
You would volunteer to work on that race?
Absolutely.
You know, the funny thing is that for years, before Learfield bought the Penn State football rights from Clear Channel, Clear Channel had Penn State football, a couple of others, but they also had the rights to CART.
That's correct.
And then eventually, of course, that meant they... Jeff Tarman has gone to so many Indianapolis 500s where he's been in the pits. In fact, one year I thought I saw Jeff changing a tire. We come back from Philadelphia one night and I said, you've been in Indy all those years. We need you to change the tire now. You're looking at us like you're dumbfounded. yeah. We're going to talk a little high school football after the top of the hour. We'll be talking with Jeremy Wynn.
That's right, the brand new coach of the Lewisburg Green Dragons.
Yes, we will. Tried to get him on last week. And Kevin said something that offended him, and
That's not true. That's not true. But this is what happens when you start the program, you know, when you get the job late into the year, and this is late in the year for a football coach to be getting things squared away. He's very, very busy running from, well, he teaches in the Danville School District, so he's running back and forth between Danville and Lewisburg right now, trying to get everything squared away. So he's putting some miles on and putting some time in.
Kevin, I saw a college basketball coach hired June 1st last year.
Well, you know what I'm talking about then, don't you? I mean, it's about the same time period. You know what I'm talking about.
I saw a football coach hired January 6th of this year, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I know, and you got to play a little catch-up. You got to play a little catch-up. You know, you had to coach the Super Bowl, too. You know?
Yeah, that must have been a challenge. That must have been horrible. You had to coach the Super Bowl and then take over your job as head coach.
He was 20 hours a day.
I bet.
He was taking literally 10 hours Penn State, 10 hours Patriots. The thing that had helped him is at least they had played the Giants already. And I remember I went into Bill's office one day, and he had a big screen up that was perpendicular to the desk. And, you know, there was Giants Patriots tape up there. And he had it paused. But, I mean, he says, yeah, he said, I'm trying to split Penn State X amount of hours, Patriots X amount of hours. He went back and forth, back and forth. I mean, it was a wild time. And you know what? You think about it, okay? Offensively, they were brilliant against Denver, okay? Good enough against Baltimore. And Manning made some big plays, and, you know, that's why they ended up beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl. He did fine. And not only that, recruiting-wise, they took the 14 verbals, they added in five more, and obviously laid a base to get eight verbals for next recruiting year. And this team, I thought, had an outstanding spring practice. I think the guy's done a hell of a job. He'll be the first to tell you, hey, Steve, we haven't won a game yet. I looked at him and said, Billy, you haven't lost a game either. All right, we'll come back in the next hour. Jeremy Wynn, head football coach Lewisburg. Kevin will talk with him after the news.